Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. What did you people do to my mic? All right, we're good to go. It's 5 o'clock on the dot, and usually it's we start at 4, but from every Monday until further notice, we're going to be having just an hour long show that is that's the Home Run show. So it will be every Monday. It's going to be just an hour, but Tuesday all through to Friday, we will be just be doing the usual 2 hours. That's from 4 o'clock all the way to 6. And since today is it's Monday, so we're just going to have an hour. That means it's going to run from 5 o'clock right now until the hour of 6, as usual. So it's just the starting time that changed, but it's not something that changed all through. That's going to change all the way through. It's just something that is going to be happening every Monday. And Tony, we're going to let you know when things are going to, you know, in the event of any change. So. For my fellow car lovers, especially for my fellow gentlemen, you know, one thing about guys is that every time that we talk about cars, when we talk about cars, or when you basically mention the word car, the first thing that comes in my head is not an electric vehicle. It's a Supra, with a 2JZ and throw in a 2, 3, 4, just 100 turbo. And just listen to that sound rev, and it's very, the whole men's mental health, cry and all that. Now, if you want to solve men's mental health, just give him a sports car. Mental health problem solved. All the boy child needs is a vrupa, and we're good. Believe me. If you don't believe me, just try it. But unfortunately for you and I, today's discussion is going to be based on electric vehicles, based on the report. Global EV report coming out of the International Energy Agency, which is not to be confused with the International Atomic Energy Agency, which they confuse the heck out of me sometimes, and that's why I like to point it out. And there are actually four organizations that have somewhat similar acronyms that confuses the Moses out of me all the time. It's the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court. ICC and ICJ. Used to mix them, but I'm clear on that. But the International Energy Agency and the International Atomic Energy Agency, these two, I'm still trying to sort of split them. Now I know the International Atomic Agency, the International Energy Agency deals with basically, with anything international, energy related, just energy in general. It doesn't matter which form of energy, whether it's a renewable, non-renewable, hydro, nuclear, fossil fuel, you name it. So as long as it's energy, it falls under the mandate. But the International Atomic Agency is exactly what it sounds like. It's it also deals with it's international in scope in terms of how they deal deal with energy discussions, but they deal with just a specific form of energy, and that is the nuclear, hence the atomic part of the acronym. So what we're going to be talking about is the International Energy Agency and the report that they put out with the help of the United Nations and one institution that I just keep forgetting here. They put out that report with the United Nations Environment Program and the Electric Vehicle Initiative. Now the report is something that I found somewhat the report is based on electric vehicles, and we don't manufacture any of that. The closest we have gotten to actually manufacturing something that assists in the supply chain, in the supply chain of EVs was just a couple of months ago when Zimbabwe basically broke the
record of being the first African country to process lithium on the continent. That's the closest we have gotten to participating in the on the manufacturing side of electric vehicles. So that's why the report itself is heavily based in terms of manufacturing in just the, Europe, North America, Asia, because these three regions participate by and large to a very large degree in terms of manufacturing. Don't get me wrong, Africa, but now we as a continent, we do participate in the, in electric vehicles, but not in manufacturing. It's mostly in the just supply of raw minerals, aka the lithium, which is a significant part of making the batteries that makes the whole, EV industry thrive. So, the whole report emphasizes a lot on just the what's happening in Asia, what's happening in Europe, what's happening in North America. But, then it's, they call it a global EV report, but, Africa is, emphasized mostly, just in reference to being consumers. Because one of the things that the report looks at is, how the EV market is spreading, especially into emerging markets or basically developed countries, developing countries. Now, EVs are overall part of the 2015 Paris Agreements, aka your energy transition discussion. Countries, basically UN member states, think of it that way. In 2015, they met and they decided, you know what, how can we save the planet from becoming a microwave and us becoming popcorns? So they came up with a bunch of ideas, as you can imagine, that they, like politicians do. They listed down a series of changes that we have to do in terms of industrialization. So we have to rethink the whole idea of industrialization, because energy transition means shift as more, a shift in form of energy from the traditional fossil fuel into renewable sources of energy like wind and solar. Now, just like any news, any new scientific breakthrough, renewable energy is a very old concept. It's just that trying to run solely all the industries, especially industries. I know that we're just talking about renewable energy, or more like energy transition, as part of the global EV discussion. But talking about renewable energy, as in using it to run industries, is not an easy thing. Now, because anyone that have done basic electrician course knows that there are basically two different categories in terms of consumption that electricity can be divided into. You have the industrial one, and you have the domestic one. You have your household, your standard household appliances like your iron or your kettle or your hot plate. They don't consume electricity, or they are not as power demanding as industrial tools like the ones that are used in mines, for example. Those machines are guzzling up energy like no man's business. No, which means you need a top notch level of of energy source to sustain the energy demand. It's like having your alcoholic friend with you. When you are going out with your alcoholic friend, you know that beer is not going to cut it. You're going to need something hot. So now, that's basically industrial equipment. Now, for Africa, which is basically a region of 54, and a couple of them debatable, Western Sahara, Somaliland, but we're not going to get into that. Now, what happens now is for Africa is in the development phase. That means we have to invest a lot in industrialization. What that translates into is to Bekele Thomas puts it, or basically the whole idea of Africa Continental Free Trade Area relies mainly on two things, energy and infrastructure. Now, you know, with energy, if you ask me, being central to the whole thing, because infrastructure is not good, going to build itself. We will have to build it. Now, to build it, we will have to, at least for the love of God, manufacture the some of, if not all of the things that we are going to need to build the infrastructure that's needed. Now, for economic development, if whatever it is that we want to build, whether it's, we want to implement the value addition discussion of, let's build processing plants that will process all the raw materials, that will process the materials that we have on this continent after mining it before, so that we don't ship it out of the continent unprocessed. Because when you ship a raw material out of the continent, you are shipping employment creation along with it. So which is why I find it very dumb every time I hear politicians say, we are going to create employment. And then when you look at Africa's overall economic dependency on the shipping out of the continent of a raw, unprocessed material, you can't help but ask yourself, you have a ship full of unprocessed raw material leaving the continent, but you're here telling me you will create employment. Do you mind running me through how? Although to be fair, when a politician say, I will create employment, and yet they allow the shipment of unprocessed raw material outside the continent. Actually, how to put this? Technically, they are creating employment, just not in Africa. So when a politician say, if you vote for me, I will create employment, you may want to ask them where. Because if you are not specific, I would argue, when I'm running for office, I'll be telling you that I will create employment if you vote for me. But then when you do, and you don't see any employment in sight, and you start asking me where's the employment that I promised, I'll tell you that employment is somewhere in China. Well, I just said I will create employment. I didn't say where. So be smart. Be a smart citizen. Now, so let's just say if we are to process all the natural resources here on the continent, you are going to need a lot of infrastructure. To build that infrastructure, we're going to need a lot of energy. Now, that's very standard. You don't have to be an economic or development expert to know that. You know that to industrialize, you need a source of energy that is affordable and reliable. You're looking for two things, affordability and reliability. Now, when you talk about, when you are part of the block that is developing in the middle of energy transition, affordability and reliability becomes a very interesting discussion to have, because you cannot run an industry solely based on solar, because, well, what are you going to do when the sun sets? Now, for countries that have a large time of sunshine exposure, solar energy would really work for us. We just have to figure out what is now a global headache in reference to solar energy. And that is, you are producing it. Okay, excellent. But we're going to store it. So, in terms of solar energy, the biggest headache is where to store the energy when the sun is not shining. So, because you're going to need it. You can't get everyone to cook during the day and then, well, wish them luck at night. Well, that's not going to work very well. Now, what that then translates into is the energy discussion, the way that the energy discussion and basically overall, the electric vehicle discussion and overall energy transition discussion, having that discussion on the African continent is must be had with Africa's energy infrastructure, energy needs, and overall developmental level in terms of economic development in mind. Asia is all the way through. In terms of development, they are development in this case, I mean industrialization. They are participating beyond producing raw material into the EV industry. And one thing I found interesting that was pointed out in the presentation that that I came across on the International Energy Agency YouTube channel, basically the presentation is sort of like a summary of the report that was you know that you can also find on the website. One thing they point out is just how China is dominating this industry, and they describe it as something that is worrisome, but. I don't see the worrisome part, but I do see the genius part. Just like every complicated piece of equipment or piece of property, and a car is one of those, and it's made out of multiple parts, and each and every single one of these parts, every screw, every nut, every ball, every nuts and bolts that you see, they have the maker that has intellectual property and intellectual property rights to it. So the challenge is, you know, for Africa, then when you look at it from that perspective, with regards to even to EV or the traditional extension, internal combustion engine, becomes one of very challenging to navigate, because not only do you need a reliable and affordable source of energy for you to participate in this industry that's already into the ionosphere in terms of technological advancement, when you look at it, especially with regards to the three regions that the report focuses on, and that's Asia, Europe, and China. Now, when you look at it from an African perspective, it's one giant headache, because first of all, we need an affordable source of energy that is reliable, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. And even for the technology that you are going to use this source to build these sources of energy from, we don't have the intellectual property to it. We will have to navigate a bunch of copyright piles of papers. And that's just in the EV alone. During the continental, aka Africa pharmaceutical industry discussion that was just held in Egypt last week, one thing they pointed out was for us to manufacture vaccines, just vaccines and any pharmaceutical products, that will be made on this African continent. One thing they came to realize, which will be one of the biggest headache, will be, the second one was the standards. We'll have to meet the World Health Organization standards with regards to anything pharmaceutical that we are going to build on the continent. That's one. But that's the easiest part of the navigating the challenges of producing pharmaceutical industry or pharmaceutical products on the continent. The second, the first and far most difficult one to navigate will be intellectual property. Now, what does that point to? In both the manufacturing of mechanical components and pharmaceutical products, both mechanical and chemical, we will have to navigate a lot of copyrights. Because take things and start manufacturing things left to right and send on a massive scale, you are looking at you're going to end up with a massive copyright infringement lawsuits. You're going to end up with a whole army of lawyers that will be coming from all over the world telling you that, you violated their patents. Now, when you look at it from that very broad perspective, and we're in Africa, that's why I'm looking at it from that angle, because if you're in Asia or in Europe, or if you're in Asia or in Europe or in North America, the discussion of EV for you, especially in terms of manufacturing, not just consumption, because if we are talking about industrialization, we'll have to look beyond consumption. So whether it's the manufacturing of EVs or the manufacturing of pharmaceutical products, as it was founded out in the Africa Health Conference in Egypt, in Cairo, Egypt, last week, one thing they found out, which is, again, they didn't have a eureka moment. This is something that anyone that understands the basic about how manufacturing works, they know that. You can't just pick stuff and start manufacturing on a large scale for your economic advantages, left, right, and center. The owners, the people that invested billions of millions, if not billions of dollars in research and development that came up with that pharmaceutical product or that electronic component, they're going to be headed your way with an army of lawyers. You better have a lot of money to defend yourself. Now, to avoid that and possibly diplomatic incidents, that's a bunch of diplomatic incidents that will most likely or inevitably going to come with that, you will have to now figure out how to navigate those challenges. And one thing I found infuriating in the Africa Health Conference discussion was they just pointed out, well, we'll have to figure out how to navigate all these challenges of global health. You know, we'll have to figure out how to navigate all these copyright challenges, but they didn't explain how. But that's what I was looking forward to. And I'm not expert, but I know why they didn't explain how. And that's because one of the easiest way out of all this, especially with regards to copyright laws, is research and development. And research and development needs a lot of money. Now, you first have to invest in skills. And those skills will translate into you producing academic individuals that are capable of basically carrying out the scientific research that will give you all the knowledge you need in whatever discipline that you require. In this case, in at least in today's Home Run discussion, that will be electric vehicles. And that industry is dominated by China to a larger extent, pretty much all through the supply chain. 2023, the New York Times published a whole article where they just asked one question. Now, New York Times, this is a Western source. Now, if you understand how media bias works, now you know how that important that piece of research was. Now, a Western media article basically put up an article, that explained how it will be difficult, if not borderline impossible, for the world to manufacture electric cars without China. Because China dominates the supply chain from the mining of the rare earth metals that are primary, very necessary for the manufacturing of electric vehicles. China participates basically all throughout the supply chain from the mining of the minerals that are used in electric vehicles all the way to the manufacturing, to the processing, all the way to the manufacturing of finished products. So take a battery, an electric battery, for example, because that's one thing that's emphasized in the report. To make an electric battery, at least a lot of companies, especially if you look at smartphones, there have been a lot of experiments with lithium polymer, so far lithium ion is the dominant boy, is the big boy in the block in terms of batteries, electronic batteries. But here's the thing. Whether it's lithium polymer or lithium ion, you still have lithium. That means you need a whole lot of lithium. So much of the mining industry. Now, take for example, 2-3 months ago, Zimbabwe became the first African country to process lithium on the continent. And that was done with the help of a company. I think that was done by a company in Zimbabwe that was a subsidiary of a much bigger company in China. It's a painful realization, but now that I've laid the foundation of just where I believe we as a continent should be looking the EV discussion from, Because I don't want to look at it from a consumption standpoint only. Because we talk a lot about Africa continental free trade area, and we have all the resources, value addition. So I assumed after, you know, with all that at the back of my head when I came across the report, I assumed, we are looking at this report. We want to look at this report from an employment creation. Now, that means we have to look at it from a manufacturing standpoint, from an industrialization standpoint, because that's where employment creation comes from. And because that's also what we need. And we are a continent that has a large number of, you know, a large and also increasing number of young people that are desperately in need of opportunities. And they're leaving the continent because of lack of those opportunities. So that's why I decided, you know what, let's look at this report from let's look at this report, at least as a continent. Let's look at it from a manufacturing standpoint. We'll deal with consumption later. I mean, we're already consuming a bunch of foreign products. Now, one thing that was pointed out was, just at the basic of the report is, at the basic of it all is this, not the, we'll get to the money later, because the money is one painful thing even for the African Union. How do we get the money? How do we get the money to finance our own development? For some reason, we have money for everything except financing our own development. And the development in terms of industrialization more often speaks to manufacturing. And you can't have manufacturing if you did not invest in research and development. And everything that we are going to talk about on this continent, especially in terms of manufacturing, whether it's food processing or pharmaceutical products manufacturing, or all the mechanical components. Take for example, if you are going to make EVs, we're going to need computer chips, and that means we'll have to figure out a way to either buy Western chips or invest in our own development to produce our own, local computer chips. And the chips industry, not chips, not French fries chips, computer chips. If you are as hungry as I am, pardon me on that. What you have here is something that, the chips industry is dominated. It's cordoned off a whole lot. Just one example. If you want to torpedo the global, let me just give you a hypothetical example. Knock on wood, it doesn't happen, because I don't want to buy a smartphone for $100,000. Not because I, actually primarily because I don't have that money. Look at it this way. Computer chips, the world of computer chips is dominated by one company, TSMC. TSMC, yeah, and it's based in Taiwan. So if there was an asteroid that fell and destroyed Taiwan today, electronic components, especially your smartphones, your laptops, and basically your cars, because most of your cars have electronic components and have computer chips running on them, the prices will go through the roof. So it's a very cordoned off industry. Now, for us to participate in an industry like that, it will take a lot of research and development. And one thing we have noticed is that there is a market protectionism taking place in the world of politics, you will be allowed to participate in the existing market of computer chips. But when you get to the point where you're becoming a little too competitive, and we learned this back in 2019 with China and Huawei, a lot of big companies will just let you to participate in an industry until a certain level. When you become a little too competitive, you become a threat. And then that's when they start calling you a national security concern. There's also that. That's basically what's forced China into a corner where they have to invest into their own, in research and development and later manufacturing, which they are already doing significantly well off, because they have invested into, after being kicked, especially after Huawei was kicked, the smartphones, because Huawei is a conglomerate. They are into a lot of things beyond just producing, you know, handsets. So, what we saw, especially in terms of market protectionism and, protectionism, if I can describe it, was that the existing markets or existing industries will only allow you to participate in that existing industry until a certain level. But you're going to reach a level where they'll start going, this newbie is becoming a little too competitive. So let's just find ways to prevent his growth. How do we navigate all those challenges? Again, all answers keeps coming back to one thing: research and development on a continental level. Now, the good thing is, if you ask me, we have the brains. Is the political will. You all have to stop stealing money, because money is, a whole lot of money is needed for research and development. There's a reason why a lot of companies get pissed when you copy their product, because for that product to exist, they either, well, stole the technology, because corporate espionage is a big deal. It's either that, even if they stole the technology, you can imagine they spent a lot of money into getting the right person to go and steal the right stuff, which is, sounds diabolical, but, well, that's the reality of the world we live in. But, now, the reason why we are going to have to navigate a lot of challenges for us to reach a level of manufacturing ability or industrialization level we want to reach is, everything that we will want to manufacture will have to jump through a bunch of hoops, intellectual property hoops, which are not cheap and not easy to jump through. It's either that or we'll have to pay for them. And paying for them means, if you ask me, paying for them and investing in your own research and development, it's more or less the exact same thing. It's just that paying will give you a quick, easy fix, which means you'll get the product, just like that. But investing in your own industrialization, research and development, it's going to take long for you to have to reach the level of refinement of that piece of product. But once you get it, it's yours. And here is the thing. Corporate espionage means a lot of intellectual property is based on people stealing technology from each other, Africans. You have got to learn to steal technology. But y'all are not going to do that because you're busy stealing money from your own people. Okay, it's not mine, they get it. It's not me. I'm saying, we're not saying don't steal. We're saying go and steal technology and then bring to the continent. Don't steal money from the continent and then take it to Switzerland, you idiot. Okay, we need a break. Let's take a break, and if you just tuned in, this is a Home Run with Helm. And it's not Mind the Gap, I swear. Dwight is not here, was supposed to, you know, keep a leash on this whole thing. But if you just tuned in, this is not Mind the Gap. This is Home Run with Helmed and Dwight in absentia. And today's discussion is based on the Global EV Outlook, which is conducted by the International Energy Agency. And they looked more at manufacturing, but they really, really put a lot of emphasis on on emerging markets, which speaks into consumption. And I decided to leave that direction. You know what? I'm not talking about manufacturing because I'm in Africa. You can talk about emerging markets if you're in Europe because you already have the intellectual property, you have the technology, and you have all that. You can manufacture the thing. And by the way, China is dominating, by the way. Still dominating, and China is a little worried. But anyway. Let's take a quick break and we'll continue on the other side. If you just tuned in, Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngejepa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijemo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. So we continue, and unfortunately for us, we only have 26 minutes left, and I have a whole lot of things to go through. And anyway, yeah. Now the global EV outlook. This is according to the International Energy Agency. The Global EV Outlook is an annual publication that identifies and assesses recent development in electric mobility across the globe. Last time Helmut and Dwight had this discussion, one thing that that was pointed out, I believe that was last year in a report of basically the same type. One thing that was pointed out is the unaffordability. It's like when we did a comparison, actually the International Energy Agency did, we just took it for, you know, from the report. Looking at the price difference in the traditional combustion engine car, take a sedan, for example. If you take an internal combustion engine, just an ordinary, sedan. One is electric and one has the traditional internal combustion engine. The internal combustion engine is going to be relatively cheaper than the electric one. For some reason, I don't know whose idea that was, because if the idea is to help people transition from non-renewable to renewable sources of energy, then just make the renewable source of energy vehicles at least affordable. And right now, that part is still highly debatable. Highly, 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 highly debatable. Now, the report combines analysis of historical data with projections and reports, and the report examines key areas of interest, such as deployment of electric vehicles and charging infrastructure, battery demand, and key policy development in major and emerging markets. There are two parts known. Now, the major markets and emerging markets, we fall in that category, especially in the category of emerging markets. And this is that is why, as an African, I just looked at emerging markets. We're in that category, and the emerging markets, this is something that that Jim O'Neill told pretty much the politicians and politicians and executives in of the Western world, especially Western Europe and Western Europe and North America. Jim O'Neill of Goldman Sachs told them that in 2000. He told them, well, the economic trajectory is shifting towards mostly developing countries. So now, if you want to expand your market, you may want to start looking at developing countries. He told them that in 2000. Did they listen? And one thing he told them was, if you want your economy to thrive in the next decades to come, you may want to make friends out of Brazil, China, India, and South Africa, aka the BRICS nations. You know what they did? They decided to make enemies out of the countries. That's one thing. That's one damn thing about politicians. Here was an economist telling them, if you want your economy to thrive, make friends out of these countries. They decided to make enemies out of the exact same countries they were told to make friends out of. And now they are looking at, the global economic outlook has such a sad picture. There's, global market protectionism. Here's the thing. Instead of making a friend out of Russia, they made an enemy out of Russia. Instead of making an enemy out, instead of making a friend out of China, they made an enemy out of China. And South Africa is a little complicated because the relationship between South Africa and much of the Western world went south during the whole Israel and, you know, South Africa, well, Hamas ICC case. So, if you want to understand the state of affairs of the world, you may want to listen more to economists than politicians. Because 90% of the time, politicians are just there to flex muscles. That's it. I'll give you a very easy example. In February, just back in February, the US and Israel decided to flex their military muscles with Iran. And right now, economists are telling them and the military experts are telling them, we have burned through our stockpiles of weapons. Now we need to manufacture more. Here's the thing. To manufacture more weapons, especially guided missiles, you need a lot of electronic components to make that thing hit the right place, to make it controllable. And here's the thing. The supply chain of the supply chain of the manufacturing of the electronic components that you need to make these bombs is dominated by China, who you have made an enemy out of. Now you see the stupidity of politics. Now what do you do? And oh, by the way, one thing I did not know that is also used in the manufacturing of especially guided missiles is cartoon. Not Tom and Jerry. It's a cotton, not cartoon. That's a good one. If Dwight was here, he would be rolling right now. It's cotton. It's just that the thing is, in Timbukushu, we call it katuni. So when I'm translating that in English, the English is on the surface, and deep under the Timbukushu is the dominant language. So just give me a break. Now, when it comes to emerging markets, we are part of the emerging markets, but I don't want to focus on that. Now, when you look at it, when you leave the emerging markets, when you take out the consumption component in this EV discussion, one thing that you see if you just have this discussion from an African perspective, aka you want to look at it from an industrialization standpoint, from a perspective of how do we participate beyond consumption? How do we participate in this industry from a manufacturing level? And you will realize just what type of a headache is awaiting us. It's not an easy one. Forget the entire thing, aka the entire vehicle. Forget the type of technology in terms of computer chips. And just talk about a battery. Just a battery. We have the lithium. Oh, actually, we have all kinds of precious metals. At this point, I don't even know why Africans pray for miracles. If I was God, every time an African prays for miracle, I would tell them, you are standing on the ground that has all the miracles you need. What do you want from me? Actually, well, if I was God, I would just be slapping you people. But anyway, I'm not, so let's just talk about that. So I decided to, now, while looking at this report, I just decided to focus on one thing, not the emerging markets. Not the emerging markets. The battery demand. The battery demand. As the energy transition takes place, more and more, that means more and more electric vehicles are being manufactured in order to keep up and later replace the traditional internal combustion engine. And that means, the more cars you make, the more batteries you are going to need. You see where I'm going with this? The more lithium you are going to need. And we have a lot of that. Actually, well, we have a lot of that as a continent. But as a country, Namibia, we don't have a lot of that. Zimbabwe has a heck of it. Now, just look at this one. An electric car is exactly that. you need a source of energy, which in this case is a battery, which is made, basically it's a bunch of batteries just stacked up together. But bottom line, you need batteries, a whole lot of them. The more cars we manufacture, the more cars, electric cars that will be manufactured, the more batteries they are going to need, and therefore the more lithium is going to be needed. That means participating in the manufacturing of batteries alone would save us a lot of trouble. Except we are back to square one. A reliable energy source, intellectual property, research and development. We're back to square one. We'll be coming back to this square one for pretty much all the 17 minutes that we have left. And so we can just, we can just forget the whole thing. If you look at this report, we can just forget the whole thing and just focus on the battery. Just focus on the battery. How can we process the lithium and then make that lithium into a finished product, aka the electric battery? Basically, the battery for the electric cars. We have the lithium. I'm pretty sure we have a fair amount of energy. But one of the biggest challenges will be the intellectual property. Yeah. Oh boy. Now, so let's just put a pause on battery. Even if we put a pause on battery, and we put a pause on Zimbabwe, because they have a whole lot of lithium. Zambia is one of those African countries that are going to be very central to the manufacturing, basically the entire EV industry, because Zambia has a whole lot of copper. And you know one thing that is needed to make an electric car? A whole lot of wiring. That means a whole lot of copper. That means Zambia. Voila. So, processing copper into refining copper and then processing it, or basically processing it and later building finished products out of it, would be an excellent, starting point for Africa. It would be an excellent starting point. But you know what we are doing as a continent, especially Namibia and South Africa? We are doing the exact same thing politicians are doing. The only difference is politicians are stealing money, and the citizens are stealing copper wires. Now, instead of focusing on how to manufacture it, we have perfected the skills on how to steal the finished product. And you know, when I find myself in heaven, if it exists, that is, my first meeting will be with an angel that sent me to Africa. Because the more I look at this, the more I start going, of all places, just for the love of God, why Africa? Don't get me wrong, I like the sun. I don't think I can manage, 8 months of not seeing the sun and snow and all that. Now, if I was in Europe, I would be one of those people that would be too broke to travel to Africa to spend at least a month or two of sunlight. So, Lord, thereby sunlight, I'm not complaining. But how we are solving problems, the thing is, I'll just keep referencing, Madame Bekele Thomas, who pointed out that, yes, the whole Africa Continental Free Trade Area was a brilliant idea. On paper, but when you look at the infrastructure that's needed to implement it, you have, the theory is going right. The physical infrastructure that's needed for the implementation of the theory is going south. Welcome to Africa. So our goal is to trade with each other. But we do not want to manufacture something. The question is, who is going to sell who? Who is going to sell what to who? And the reason why I picked the manufacturing, just the manufacturing part of this report is Because I believe as much as we like to talk about Africa Continental Free Trade Area, let's come together as African countries, let's have more intra-Africa trade, because as of now, a bunch of African countries trade more with outside Africa countries than they do with inside Africa countries. So the Africa Continental Free Trade Area then tries to sort of like solve that problem by bringing us together as a continent and more like forcing us to have a discussion of how can we trade with each other. And there's one big problem. A large chunk of Africa overall economy, a bunch of African countries, our economies are heavily reliant on the extractive industry, aka mining. And coming secondary to that for a lot of country is the agriculture industry. I believe it's the agriculture industry is one interesting one. It's coffee and caramel for West Africa, for East Africa, and cocoa for chocolate. That's West Africa. That's Ivory Coast and Ghana. Madagascar produces a whole lot of not caramel. There's one of those cake toppings that Madagascar is very good at. So it's also all these are agricultural produce. So yes, and tourism. When you talk about tourism and you talk about the Gambia is a whole different discussion of tourism. The Gambia that gave us Fata Bensouda, the very brilliant, former chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, who was caught in between a rock and hard place, thanks to the Israeli intelligence when she wanted to basically initiate, investigations into what has been going on basically for 70 plus years now in Palestine / Israel, whatever side of the fence you fall under. The Gambia, that country that gave us that brilliant woman is the one country that is known for a very interesting form of tourism. I will let you figure that one out because I'm trying to behave. Now, let's talk about the consumption part of this report. As an emerging market, we can talk about the consumption aspect of the EV market. And even after all the challenges that I already pointed out, that Africa will have to navigate to participate in the electric vehicle industry, even if we put aside the manufacturing part of that report and we just look at the consumption and consider ourselves an emerging market, we still have one giant problem. You know how most of the fueling stations on the African continent are owned by foreign companies? Puma is Swiss, Total is French, Shell is American, if not American, British. That's the exact same thing that we are going to witness with the, with the rise in electric vehicles. Because one thing that, apart from, emerging markets and the demand of car batteries by the electric vehicles, the report also look at one thing. And that is, for every market that is, quickly or rapidly adopting the electric vehicles, they are going to need charging stations. Now, that is also a whole piece of infrastructure that is going to be needed. Now, picture this. I think 5-10 years down the line, just take it, let's just go on average 2050, 2060, we are going to see a rise in replacement of fueling stations by foreign multinational corporations with the, again, foreign-owned electric vehicle charging stations. Why? Because, to have it or own it locally, we'll have to manufacture it. And we already went through the challenge that we'll have to navigate to manufacture a battery Now, if we have a problem, if we have a challenge manufacturing, you know, manufacturing a battery, that means we have even a bigger challenge manufacturing charging stations. Because one of the biggest challenge in the charging stations that are being used today is they take longer to charge. So the a lot of companies and a lot of countries, especially developed countries, are now, as we speak, pouring billions into the research and development that will make charge the cars faster. Think of it as your fast charger, but for cars. So we don't have we're still behind. Let me just say, be positive here. We're still behind in manufacturing the car itself, the electric vehicle itself. We're still really behind in manufacturing a battery. We're really behind in manufacturing the infrastructure, aka like charging stations that are needed for this technology to be adopted. But in 2015, we showed up in Paris, France. And we said, you know what, energy transition, we will do it. We got this. In terms of energy transition overall, one of the biggest challenge is the investment. A lot of countries want to go out there and basically, and part of the pledges, part of the commitment that were, pledges that were made by developed countries during the 2015 Paris agreements. One of the agreement that was made, especially by developed countries was to invest a whole lot of their money, which they acquired by stealing resources from developing countries, by the way, to invest a lot of their money into developing countries' transition program, energy transition program. You know how I said listen more to, economists than politicians? Well, one thing that was not addressed in all those pledges was the credit rating agencies. Now, the standard of rating, basically your credit worthiness, look at it this way. Before a country is lended money, the lender does the due diligence, the very same due diligence that your local loan guy does, before borrowing you money, let's just use commercial banks. If you go to a commercial bank to borrow money, they have to look at your finances, and this is what a lot of other micro lenders, yeah. This the Namfisa term that keeps flying out of my head. Micro lenders, they're also required to do that. They are required to do that. Actually, they are. And you can get more information on that from your Micro Lending Act. But the thing is, they are required to do that. So, now they have to look at, how much you earn. How much do you already owe if you do owe? How many accounts do you have with this furniture store or that shop or that, phone store? Now, they don't hate you. They are just looking at your ability to repay back the money they will risk borrowing you. And, international organizations, international investors are just looking for, they are looking for, at the exact same thing. Before they borrow you money, they are looking at your ability to repay it back. And the thing is, for countries now, there are ratings that comes with that. Credit worthy type of ratings. And a lot of countries, especially in developing countries, don't have a good enough credit ratings. There are two countries that were pointed out that have a good enough credit rating. And I forgot the other one, but Botswana is one of them. We didn't make a cut. There's something that the United Nations Development, Agency called, what they call that? Not the United, that's a, Express, is it, Express? A, that's your AP News. It's an American media house. One thing that they pointed out, and this is an article that was put out last week on Africa's energy problem in terms of investment. Billions of dollars have been pledged for Africa's clean energy, according to AP News. Billions of dollars have been pledged for Africa's clean energy transition, yet many renewable energy projects across the continent are still failing to get off the ground as countries struggle with a soaring financing cost driven by a financial rule known as sovereign ceiling, experts say. Now, so I decided to go basically just do what every person that has no economic knowledge of what sovereign ceiling means. So decided to just go straight to the United Nations Development Program website. So they do explain something interesting. Now, according to the United Nations Development Program, this is how they explain it. A country that is considered too risky to borrow money. When an investor, take for example, multinational corporation that wants to invest in that country's green energy transition, when they invest in that country, their rating in terms of credit worthiness is brought down to the same level of that country. And the retarded part of my head can't wrap my mind around it. Think of it this way. You are a multinational company that has a very excellent credit rating. You can go to any financial institution and they will give you money because you have a very good credit rating. In other words, you have a good reputation in terms of your ability to pay back your loans, or to pay back the money that they borrow you. But when you go to invest in a country that has a low or considered a credit risky in terms of credit rating, your rating is reduced to the level of the country you are operating into. Who the heck would want that? And now, as a result, a lot of investors that want to invest in a lot of developing countries, most of which, Africa, all 54 of us, forms that category, minus Botswana and one country that I keep forgetting, we are considered a little too risky. And frankly, a lot of multinationals, which is don't want to invest in a lot of developing countries and throw Africa in that bucket because they don't want their credit worthiness to be brought down to that of the level of the country they are investing into. That's something that the United Nations Development Program themselves called a lot of bullcrap, and they must change it. You know what? This whole credit rating things is also a lot of nonsense. And I'm saying that because, I have seen it's an inside job. The 2008 financial crisis, the 2008 financial crisis, documentary that's just based on the impact that the overall economic meltdown that happened 2008-2009, and how it impacted Iceland. The first thing that foreign investors did when they got in Iceland was they privatized the country's three major banks, and after they privatized those banks, started borrowing a behind load of money to foreign financial institutions. And you know what? Just in the mid of those three companies torpedoing the whole economy of Iceland, they were given AAA rating. They were about to torpedo the country's economy, and they were rated AAA. It turns out that the highest rating of credit worthiness, given by the credit rating agencies. And you know what? In 2007, those banks were given AAA credit rating. And 2009, there was an economic meltdown. If they are that good, if they are that good at managing money, how come their collapse took down the entire country's economy? So the rating itself, if you ask me, is as political as FIFA right now is. And everyone was running around, you know, FIFA is not political. You don't know a thing about politics, do you? First of all, the president of FIFA doesn't have power. No. The people that bring together money to make FIFA possible, those are the guys with power. Think of it as campaign contributors, but for soccer. Wherever you're going to run to, politics is going to be there. So, let's wrap this up. The painful part of this, the whole global EV report is, it's difficult to have that discussion from an African standpoint. Because whether you are looking at it from an emerging market, as in consumption, or manufacturing, as in participating not just in the whole the manufacturing, you know, manufacturing a whole vehicle, or you know, just an electric battery, Africa is nowhere near participation into the industry. Yeah, I think I'm gonna have a headache. So that painfully brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same. You know, sometimes I even forget that there's a camera there. You know, I'm just used of looking at Dwight and my computer here. So that brings us to the end of today's Home Run. I'll just leave you, you know, with the source, and the source of today's Home Run was the International Energy Agency's Global EV Outlook report. I don't know about you, but just get the report and just read through. But from my point of view, as an African, it's difficult to we can look at it from a manufacturing standpoint, from a consumption standpoint. Because when you look at it from a manufacturing standpoint, you are talking about what? Intellectual properties for you to make a battery, for you to make a, pretty much any part of the car that you are planning on making, including the car as a whole. That's the manufacturing standpoint. Now, when you look at it as an emerging market or as a consumer, you know that you are going to need electric charging vehicles, which is part of the infrastructure referred to the expansion of, you know, as part of, as a, an extension of the electric vehicles part of energy transition. And you are back to square one, which is what? Manufacturing, which translates to, finished products. Finished products, processing products. The only participation we are participating in that industry is to what? Unprocessed raw material, which we are not even mining, by the way, because if you look at a bunch of companies that own the mines, are all foreign multinational corporations. So, you know, just manufacturing overall, we are the biggest of all the big benchers. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Regular FM, from yours truly here. Y'all have a good one.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.